This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yisroo Heap. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
UNFPA's Worlds Apart report calls for action. Actions that will lead to a brighter future where women govern their own lives, have equal access to sexual and reproductive health, health care, health services, and knowledge. The knowledge, skills, and power to find gainful employment.
That was Dr. Natalia Kanem, Executive Director of the United Nations Population Fund. A flagship report was launched today along with the State of the World Population Report 2017 that focuses on the poorest woman. We'll have full details coming up.
Also, 3 days of national mourning in Somalia as the death toll in the capital Mogadishu tops 300, and Kenya's opposition suspends protest following deadly unrest yesterday.
We have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Top story, the Somali government has called for 3 days of national mourning. This as the death toll in the capital Mogadishu tops 300 from a massive explosion blamed on Islamist militants. Rescuers continue to search for survivors in the rubble. The government says 429 people were injured in Saturday's attack and that the death toll is likely to rise. Although there has been no claim of responsibility, Somali government officials and terrorism experts say they think Al-Shabaab militants were behind the explosion. In Washington, the White House strongly condemned the attack, which claimed U.S. citizens among the casualties. A VOA reporter in Mogadishu, Abdul Qadir Mohammed Abdulle, was among those injured.
One of the victims of the explosion was Marian Abdullahi Gedi. She was about to graduate from Benadir University Medical and Surgery Department in Mogadishu. She wanted to become a doctor and hoped to help her country, which is desperately short of doctors. But on Saturday, Gedi was killed on the bomb blast. Her mother, Hinda Yusuf, told VOA Somali Service that her daughter was loved by those who knew her. Yusuf says she was known to all as the loved one. Gedi was waiting for a bus when a truck packed with explosives detonated. Classmate Hodan Abdullahi Ali told VOA that several Benadir students and graduates were among the victims. Old Ali says the entire school mourns Gedi's death. Despite the tragedy, Gedi's mother doesn't seek revenge for the attack. Yusuf said, "We are a Muslim society, and when we face miserable conditions like this, we have to be patient and make sure we keep things under control."
The United Nations reports conditions in Central African Republic have continued to deteriorate since a serious outbreak of intercommunal violence in mid-May between the Muslim Seleka and largely Christian anti-Balaka armed groups. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Fighting in some parts of Central African Republic has become so intense, the United Nations and private aid agencies have had to suspend their activities. The UN humanitarian coordinator in the CAR, Najat Rochdi, says security has become so bad in the East, agencies have had to change their mode of operations.
We cannot do it anymore, business as usual, having bases, you know, here and there, but rather strengthening some hubs, actually, around a number of cities where the security is much more important, and from there fly in special emergency teams, a kind of surge teams.
Since January, the United Nations reports a 50% increase in the number of internally displaced people to 600,000. Refugee numbers also have increased to nearly 500,000. Rochdi says humanitarian operations in the country are suffering from severe underfunding. She says only 39% of the nearly $500 million appeal for this year has been received. Because of the lack of funding, she says food rations have had to be cut in half.
And that there are places where actually we have stopped the food distribution. We already have very serious worsening of the malnutrition situation. And for example, unfortunately, in the southeast, we started already seeing children dying from severe malnutrition.
Humanitarian coordinator Roshdi says there are unconfirmed reports that 10 children have died from malnutrition-related causes in the town of Zemio in southeastern CAR. She says shelter and protection concerns also are growing. Another cause for alarm is education. She says 400,000 children are not going to school. She warns nearly a whole generation of children who have lost out on education may not have a viable future, and this, she says, will spell disaster for the whole country. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A flagship report released along with the State of World Population 2017 report by the UN Population Fund finds a surprising link between inequality and family planning. The report is called Worlds Apart: Reproductive Health and Rights in an Age of Inequality. It warns that failure to provide reproductive health services, including family planning, to the poorest women can weaken economies. It can also sabotage progress toward the number of sustainable goals, development goals, to eliminate poverty. Dr. Natalia Kahneman is the newly appointed executive director of the UN Population Fund. She spoke with me about the findings of the study.
UNFPA's Worlds Apart report calls for action, actions that will lead to a brighter future where women govern their own lives, have equal access to sexual and reproductive health, health care, health services, and knowledge, the knowledge, skills, and power to find gainful employment. Part of that success will be to ensure that adolescent girls are not getting pregnant. They are getting their secondary education. The report shows ample evidence of the protective nature of secondary education, so a girl can join the workforce, be self-sufficient, and decide how, when, where, and with whom she's going to have children. The report focuses on the type of inequality that women and girls face because of lack of access to reproductive health care and services.
Also, it focused on the poorest women and girls. What geographic areas did you all do your research on?
The report, in fact, covers the world population. And what we're trying to do is to show that inequality exists everywhere within countries, and to highlight the fact that usually the most left behind women and girls are those who are poor and those who live in rural, more remote locations. So we actually survey the entire world, and we show that there are some regions that are advancing and others that are not. And within regions, there are countries that are advancing and others that are not. We pull out examples of where success is already evident. Countries like Bangladesh or Rwanda or Senegal that are making progress. And it's a reinforcing progress, because progress on family planning, for example, leads to economic prosperity. It also leads women to be able to participate in the social life of their community and of their country.
Why has inequality been such an ongoing challenge for women throughout the world?
The report that UNFPA presents today, the State of World Population, is called Worlds Apart because we're path-breaking in showing that inequalities in women's health can reinforce economic equality as well. So in other words, we make the link between the fate of that woman and girl to the actual economic growth and development of her community and her country, showing that the potential cost to society is not only in the economic realm, but that there is a link to instability in a community when there's thwarted development. And that's why we express this worry that we may fail to achieve the sustainable development goals, particularly ending poverty goal, if women and girls are not free to participate in the economic life of the country.
So it's also about getting everyone to understand the importance of young women to be able to empower themselves.
That's exactly right, because when we think about unchecked inequality, and we see that only about half of the world's women can hold a paid job, this sets up a cycle of poverty that's going to affect the next generation, her children. So she's a grandmother already at the age of 40. She really did not have time to invest in each individual child or grandchild. As we try to address certain types of inequality, with women globally earning only 77% of what men get for the exact same job, even if a woman has a job, maternity leave, child care, so many aspects of her disadvantage as somebody in the paid labor force. So we think that this motherhood penalty affects the poorest women most acutely, but in fact it affects all of us. So that's why we really feel that this report is bringing out that relationship between inequalities in women's health, our unique role in perpetuating the family and in being the childbearers, should not lead to us being penalized or to having our success and happiness truncated at an early adolescent age.
That's Dr. Natalia Khanom. She's the newly appointed executive director of the UN Population Fund. She spoke with me from London.
Kenya's opposition has suspended protests following deadly unrest yesterday as the country struggles to finalize a seemingly never-ending presidential election. As tensions rise, some see traces of the decades-long rivalry between two of Kenya's top political families coming to the fore. From Western Kenya and Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig reports.
Daily twists and turns since Kenya's Supreme Court nullified the August presidential results. A new challenge, perhaps, but familiar faces, with each side more entrenched than ever. The rivalry between President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga echoes that of their fathers, the country's first president and vice president following independence in 1963. Wilbur Otichilo is governor of Kenya's Vihiga County.
During those early 60s, there was this big rivalry between the West and the East. And that's now how the two now became rival. And after 1 year of being vice president, Jomo Kenyatta fired Jaramogi Odinga from his government. And that's how he formed the opposition.
The two men disagreed on general ideology and on resource and land allocation issues, much like their sons. But University of Nairobi lecturer Herman Manyora cautions against oversimplification.
There's something in you, perhaps as a human being, that you say, well, I will fight the wars of my father. I will complete what my father started. You could look at it that way, but I have already explained, I see it beyond that myself. Because there's a clear dichotomy in the arrangement of our politics. And our economics and everything else in this country.
Since independence, no one from outside Kenya's Rift Valley or central provinces has ruled the country, feeding a sense of marginalization in the West, Odinga's home region. That has been exacerbated by Odinga's contested defeats in the past three elections. Opposition supporter Zeblon Olo works as a mechanic in Kakamega County.
Since independence, we were Mr. Jomo Kenyatta. He rules for 15 years. Then Moi took. He rules for 24 years. After that, Mr. Kibaki took. He rules 10 years. After that, Mr. Uhuru has taken. Now it's 5 years. Now, from there is no anything we have helped between Western Kenya. We are down.
There is more to Kenyan politics than familial rivalry. Odinga has dominated the opposition for decades, while Uhuru Kenyatta, a man 17 years his junior, only became interested in politics in the early 2000s. Previously, Odinga even supported candidates from Kenyatta's Kikuyu ethnic group, including his former rival Mwai Kibaki at one point. And now, some politicians in the West, like former Vihiga County Governor Moses Akaranga, are switching sides, backing Kenyatta for the October 26th repeat election.
Many Kenyans are talking about, including the Luos in Kisumu. They feel that if now we vote for Uhuru Kenyatta, he will finish his term, completely will go home. So the Kenyatta dynasty will have gone. Raila will not make it again because of his age. So the Jaramogi Odinga's dynasty also will have gone. So the Kenyatta and Jaramogi will now leave Kenyans to choose or elect a leader from another dynasty.
For now, however, Kenyans just wait for the next developments in an election season that has been anything but ordinary. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. 3 days of national mourning in Somalia as the death toll in the capital Mogadishu tops 300. According to a United Nations report, since the outbreak of serious intercommunal violence in Central African Republic, conditions in that country continue to deteriorate, and Kenya's opposition has suspended protests following deadly unrest yesterday. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
United Nations aid agencies say the Boko Haram conflict continues to exacerbate acute malnutrition in the Lake Chad Basin, leaving 800,000 children under five at risk this year. Moki Edwin Kinziga reports from villages around Gaoua in northern Cameroon, where aid workers are trying to reverse the trend by educating mothers.
Northern Cameroon was already grappling with high rates of chronic child malnutrition, as much as 30% before the Boko Haram conflict arrived in 2014. Since then, mass displacement and the influx of refugees has contributed to food shortages. The insecurity by the conflict has brought a virtual halt to farming and herding activities. The UN Children's Fund says the rate of acute malnutrition among children in far northern Cameroon is climbing to emergency levels.
Il y a des mamans qui ne comprennent pas que c'est un traitement. Qu'on admet un enfant dans un programme, il y a...
Calvin Lamisa, a point person for UNICEF and the government of Cameroon, says they have decided to move from house to house to educate women on how to feed their children, because they have noticed that as soon as mothers start seeing signs of improvements, they stop visiting hospitals to follow up treatments for their malnourished children. She says they recommend that some children continue treatments for up to 12 months because a lot of them are exposed to illnesses and suffer from severe diarrhea due to poor hygiene. VOA joined health workers as they met with 200 mothers in the village of Kose.
Some.
27-year-old Bedale Asta recently lost one of her 2-month-old twins. She says she gave birth at home and she immediately started giving water and traditional meals to her babies and discovered that they were permanently sick. She says the village healer told her that the children were either suffering from malaria or stomach disorders. The World Health Organization recommends exclusive breastfeeding for newborns until the age of 6 months. For older babies and children, UNICEF is distributing ready-to-use therapeutic foods and nutrient packs.
Je fais la démonstration culinaire. La nourriture déjà préparée.
Trainer and health worker Seni Bukar says he is demonstrating to the women that when they prepare food for their households, they should remove the portion they are to serve to their babies and young children and add a spoonful of the vitamin pack provided by UNICEF. He says he is asking the women to wash their hands with clean water and soap before cooking and especially before feeding their children. UNICEF says in northern Cameroon, about 60,000 refugee and internally displaced children under the age of 5 are at risk of severe acute malnutrition this year, while another 145,000 children under the age of 5 are facing stunted growth. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Garowa, Cameroon.
After sitting 50 years in the National Geographic Archives, 100 hours of footage on Jane Goodall and her groundbreaking observations of chimpanzees in the African forest of Tanzania have been compiled into a documentary film. At a screening of the film in Los Angeles, Goodall spoke to VOA's Elizabeth Lee about her work and thoughts on the film.
Day after day, in the sun and the wind and the rain.
The documentary titled Jane starts in 1960 when Jane Goodall was 26 years old. Through interviews with Goodall and National Geographic footage, the film documents Goodall's early years as a woman with no university degree working in a remote part of Tanzania. Her unconventional ways of observing these chimps challenged the scientific community's belief on what it means to be human.
Well, more than any other documentary that's been made, it does take me back into the actual feeling I had when I was out there in the forest. And so it's very moving.
Goodall says the music composed by Philip Glass made watching the documentary a magical experience for her. For Glass, there was one moment in the film that especially moved him.
The very intimate scenes when she's sitting with them, and they're like children to her. She's combing their hair and she talks with them, and they're just with her as if they've accepted her totally.
With that acceptance, Goodall made headlines by discovering that chimpanzees are intelligent, social animals who use tools to gather food, something the scientific community at the time believed only humans could do.
Everything worked out perfectly, and were mistakes made, of course, but one learns from mistakes. And so I wouldn't have changed anything, really.
Goodall remembers her unique relationship with the chimps.
It's not quite family, but it's not quite like friends, but I'm part of their lives. They accept me. I can watch what they do. And of course, in the time of the movie, we had a really close, touching relationship, which we don't have anymore.
This documentary features the footage of National Geographic filmmaker Hugo van Lawick, Goodall's first husband.
Going through 100 hours of Hugo van Lawick's footage is a dream. Hugo's one of the greatest wildlife cinematographers in the history of filmmaking.
Hollywood actor Jamie Lee Curtis describes why she is in awe of Goodall.
She has just by doing what she loves, has brought us all along on the journey. And that's a message, if anything. Be uncompromising in your vision, uncompromising in your attack and attitude of what it is that you do.
I was persuaded.
Even in present day, Goodall continues to travel and speak about the need to protect the natural world. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth discussion on the unpredictable nature of Africa's presidential politics. From Liberia's peaceful transition of power, to uncertainty in the Democratic Republic of Congo, to confusion in Kenya. A conversation on the continent's unsettling elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.